This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Southampton beat City and restrict them to no shots on target. Sounds like one of Barry's daft predictions, doesn't it? A huge night for Nathan Jones, perhaps the biggest of his career, and a thoroughly deserved victory. Sets up a Carabao Cup semi-final with the all-powerful Newcastle. Meanwhile, on a rainy night in Nottingham, Forest through to their first League Cup semi-final for 30 years or so after getting past Wolves on penalties. Lots of fingers and ears celebrations and Dean Henderson's knee slide. They'll play Manchester United, who've got City at the weekend in the Premier League. We'll look ahead to that, the North London derby and some huge games at the bottom. There's Arsenal-Chelsea to look forward to in the WSL, and quite an obvious and important Inter Milan-based apology from me. All that plus your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jordan Jarrett-Bryan, welcome.
Morning, mate.
Hello, Robin Cowan.
Hi, Max. So back from serving my one-match ban.
Absolutely right. The magic of the cup.
I took it like a Boubacar. I was like, I knew what I was doing. So I just shook your hand and I accepted it.
Welcome, Barry.
Hello. How are you?
Did you have the magic of the cup, Robin, in your mind when that winning goal went? I mean, it was a good moment. I can't confess. It was the Stevenage winner.
I just thought, I've got to say it because it's going to be on a montage. So it's got to be said. But next time will be Cup of Dreams, of course.
Yes, of course. Well, Alan says the Sky commentator called last night's victory Southampton the Cup of Dreams. Was he on John Bruin's brainstorming panel? Yeah, Southampton 2, Manchester City 0. Ben says, what on earth's going on at Southampton? Back-to-back cup wins versus Premier League opposition. Signing exciting players. Manager who none of the fans want or like. Can we stay up? Chris, thoughts on the chances of Nathan Jones to lose every league game but win the FA and League Cups? Someone else tweeted, is he losing in the league so he can concentrate on the cup? I mean, what a moment, Barry, for Nathan Jones.
Yes, and he milked it. Didn't have milk it afterwards in his post-match interviews, during which he was quite spiky, I would say. This was a brilliant performance by Southampton and a very brave one, I thought, because Nathan Jones, he's just, you know, he's only played, managed 6 or 7 games. The fans, he knows the fans don't like him. He knows they think his was an underwhelming appointment. And his team hasn't played well in several consecutive league games. So to take the game to Manchester City like they did last night and win and do so aggressively and on the front foot, I thought was incredibly courageous, because that could have gone all sorts of wrong and they could have got absolutely battered. But they didn't. They went 2 up and they closed out the game incredibly comfortably against a City side that was a little bit weak, obviously, but it's still a City side and man for man, probably better than Southampton in most departments. And afterwards, I did enjoy the fact that I've noticed in, and it's something Southampton fans have noticed as well, and they didn't like it, is that he's always referred to the team as they, you know, they, the players, they did this, they did that. But last night it was we. And I thought that was quite interesting. But absolutely fair play to him. I mean, I know last week we were questioning the appointment, and still has a lot to do. I think, did they go to Everton on Saturday? That's a big game. He's certainly bought himself some time there, and much needed time.
Yeah, Joe tweets, you do know what you're doing. You do know what you're doing, which is a chant that people should sing, isn't it? And just imagine how he is going to walk into the training ground this morning, Robin. You know, he knows, just at least for now, at least until Saturday, he's the absolute boss.
Yeah, I think it's really significant, this win for him, because I think, really fans especially were really starting to lose faith in him already. And this, it's very, very big. And the manner of it is, Barry took the words right out of my mouth, it was so brave what they were doing, playing in tight spaces, and they were comfortable. It wasn't a backs to the wall win at all. They were fantastic. But yes, I was listening to him on Five Live and he was saying that the performances have been there previously, and I hard disagree on that. I did their game against Nottingham Forest and they were just abysmal. They looked like they didn't know what they looked like they really didn't know what they were doing there. So I mean, the turnaround and to produce this against Man City, and you know, Haaland comes on. When I saw him stripping off, I think, well, here we go. He's just going to score a couple easily and this will be it. But he was still making those runs and he was shackled. And it's just, I'm so impressed with them to be able to do that and to instill that confidence in them so quickly after a really bad defeat against Forest is a huge credit to Nathan Jones.
I'm expecting Jordan to come in and say, actually, it wasn't that good now.
Well, I think actually this game actually was more about Man City being bad than Southampton being good. But I will give them credit because it can't be easy if you're Nathan Jones and you know, as you mentioned there, Max, that there's a large part of the fan base that aren't having you and even want you out already. I'm still not convinced he starts next season as the manager at Southampton, but this deserves a lot of credit. They were brave. They were really brave. A couple of really good goals. I love the first goal. Really good goals, Max, in this game. They deserved what they got. Southampton are a weird club. I don't know how you can be, as Robin was saying, so bad against a Nottingham Forest team and previous to that, but yet be so brave and on the front foot. And they played some good football against the best team, you know, the Premier League champions. They're a really random team. But no, fair play to them. Fair play to them.
And Barry, I mean, what does this mean for whether Ralph Hasenhüttl was good or not? No idea. The goals were great. For the second goal, Barry, I'm not entirely sure what Ortega is doing, but still, Gineppo has a lot of work to do.
Well, did he have a lot to do? I mean, he advanced upfield into acres of space. Kyle Walker didn't engage. Didn't try to challenge him. He spotted the keeper off his line, so he had one thing to do, and that was chip him or lob him, and that's exactly what he did. And he did it very well. And one would imagine his confidence isn't particularly high because I think he hadn't scored for the best part of 2 years. But no, I'm going to hard disagree, Max, there, Max. Okay. He didn't have a lot to do. He had one thing to do, and he did it perfectly.
Yeah, it looked lovely, didn't it?
Yeah.
Nadim, who was a panel for Sky, I mean, he's everywhere. We launched him, he'll forget us soon enough, said the first goal was elite strikers play from Sekou Mara, who is his first goal, signed from Bordeaux. His mum is a French news presenter on TF1. That's what the research that I've managed to find out this morning. City, Robin, had no shots on target. First time since 2018. I mean, that's mad, isn't it?
That's astounding. Absolutely astounding. And I think, you know, most of the credit should go to Southampton. But yes, they were poor. They were poor yesterday. But I just think that's Southampton were just shut them down brilliantly. You know, Lianco, who put that perfect through ball in for Mara, you know, he won it, went down the wing. And he was the one who made that massive mistake against Forest. I think the Southampton fans like him. I mean, yeah, defensively, they've made a lot of individual errors this season, but they managed to not do any at all against City last night. And I think they were saying that's the first time Pep Guardiola's lost a cup quarter final in his career. So, I mean, big. This is big.
Yeah, Man City are also weird. I took more from their defeat on this one because it seems like everything is geared towards them trying to win the Champions League. They feel a lot more beatable this year. And there's echoes of United in two stints with Ronaldo coming in and Zlatan a few years before that. They've brought in a better player, but are they arguably easier to beat? Are they worse? That sounds a little bit crazy, but they've got in this absolute machine up front that can't stop scoring, but yet they seem to feel, as opposed to last year, definitely a lot easier to beat. And it feels to me like with their league form being a bit, yeah, they're now out of the Carabao Cup, and we'll see what my lot Arsenal can do in the FA Cup against them. It all feels like the focus is, this is the year we have to win the Champions League.
And that is a mad thought, isn't it? Like Nathan says, what percentage of the panel put on Man City going trophyless this season? If they do, was bringing in a recognised striker, as Jordan says, a mistake? Like the idea that you could bring in Haaland, he scores a million goals every game, and yet
you finish third.
Potless, yeah. It's ridiculous, Barry.
Well, I mean, if they don't win the Premier League and Arsenal do, Pep will look like an awful chump. The fact that he was happy to sell Gabriel Jesus and Oleksandr Zinchenko to the Gooners suggested he didn't see them as any sort of threat in the title race. And thus far, he's been proven very wrong. It is conceivable that they could go trophyless. It's unlikely, but I wouldn't bet against it.
Would that be the first time since he... Well, they went trophyless his first season, I think, didn't they?
That's when he was a fraud.
Bald fraud.
He may have proved us wrong. I think you could probably tell how angry he was by how sort of happy he appeared to be and sort of how generous in defeat he was to Southampton. Unless he was just being generous in defeat and I'm reading far too much into it. You're shaking your head, Robin.
he's a really tricky one to interview. Thankfully, I haven't had to do it for quite some time, but he's just a weird bloke, isn't he? he's really intense. And I really like, I love the way when they batter teams, he's always so complimentary about the opposition and how they play against them. And yeah, actually, to be fair to him, he wasn't that bad yesterday after the defeat. You know, obviously, sometimes he's very, very awkward. But
have you had to chat to him after defeat then?
Clearly after I was just reporting final score, the Andros Townsend belter for Crystal Palace, which they lost. Kyle Walker had one of the worst games I've ever seen him have, which he occasionally does. I mean, I think one of them was last night. And I asked him about that and he went, I think it was one of his best games. So it's just very awkward.
Yeah. Because it's quite hard in that moment to go, I'm not sure, Pep. You know, like that's what everybody wants you to do. But yeah. You're like, then he'll ban me. He'll do what Sir Alex did. I'll be banned. I won't be able to talk to him ever again. So interviewing managers afterwards is a completely thankless task. It's almost pointless, isn't it?
I hate doing it.
That's what you should say. You don't want to be here and neither do I. So look, let's get it done quickly.
Yeah. Should we just not bother?
Sorry. Is it worth just something Robin said there about Kyle Walker having a poor game last night, which I agree with. I thought he was a bit culpable for both goals. But Calvin Phillips and Jack Grealish were way off it as well again. And at what point do you decide that maybe they weren't good signings or maybe there isn't a place for them at City?
I agree, Barry. I think that to the point about them being a worse team but having brought in a superstar striker, I think Pep was banking on the likes of Grealish for sure this year in kicking on. He let Sterling go as well. I think this was the year that he really thought Grealish is going to, you know, fill that void, get those goals that Sterling and Jesus got. And I think you're right to flag it. I don't think that the Phillips one was never meant to be a mainstay in the first 11 anyway, but in these sorts of games, you'd expect him to deliver and step up in the Carabao Cup. But I think there's massive question marks over those two signings in particular, and they could be an element as to why City, if they don't win a trophy, don't win a trophy.
I think it's slightly early for Phillips, don't we think?
I think it's quite early for both of them, isn't it? I think.
But at least Grealish has had a season and a bit. Like Phillips has had an injury. And he's also, of course, got really fat as well, as we know.
we will see, won't we, Jordan? But I think Grealish played really well the other day in the second half, and everyone was saying at halftime he was hopeless, and then he set up two goals. And yeah, I think he's a wonderful player. I mean, if you cost £100 million, of course, more eyes are on you, aren't they? Or the same eyes are on you, just more intently. On a side note, Matty says, would you be able to do a bit on the kits last night, happening more and more often nowadays? It's just stupid, particularly when there are alternatives available. Being colorblind, I can't watch the game. Maybe speak to @colorblind.org. I know occasionally I used to get annoyed with unnecessary kit clashes. And then it was explained to me, well, these two kits are like this because of colorblindness. And I'm sure they look at it in the Premier League, but I don't know why they didn't. And that is annoying for you and it is something that should be sorted out. And perhaps we'll give this guy a call and chat about it, because what a waste of time when there are so many kits. Seems easily avoidable, doesn't it? Forest 1, Wolves 1. Forest winning on penalties into the semi-final for the first time since 1992. Dean Henderson saving from youngster Joe Hodge. Jose Sa looked very cold and wet in the shootout. That was sort of my main observation, just wanting it to end. Is that a fair result, Barry? It felt quite hard to choose between these two, but Forest probably edged it.
Yeah, I suppose that... I think if Wolves had won the shootout, you could probably say the same thing.
Yeah, probably.
So that's And that's why it went to a shootout, I guess. Forest, you know, they were decent, quick counterattacks. The goal was really scruffy. And they needed Dean Henderson to pull off a couple of really, really good saves to get to the shootout. But yeah, I wouldn't begrudge them their place in the semi-final at all. But I think it was a sort of a coin toss of a game.
And actually, you mentioned Dean Henderson, Robin, and the biggest part of all of this is because they're playing Manchester United, he can't play in the semi-final. And that, and Wayne Hennessy comes in, and that does feel like a sort of a down trade of goalkeepers.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's a huge shame, actually, because Dean Henderson, as Barry rightly said, he made loads of really good saves, and obviously he's got a fantastic penalty record as well. And yeah, he's got that main character energy, as you mentioned in the intro, the big old knee slide. I'm not sure I've seen that from a goalkeeper. It's it'd be great for him to be up against Emiliano Martinez. They can who's the biggest shithouse out of both of them.
Going back to the fact Dean Henderson is ineligible to play for, that rule is stupid and should be eliminated. Because to the best of my knowledge, it's not a global thing. It's just a peculiarly English thing, I think. I know it doesn't apply in the Champions League, but it's a really daft rule. I mean, Manchester United have sent this player out on loan. There doesn't seem to be any great love between Manchester United and him. You know, he was quite very disparaging of them as soon as he arrived at Forest. And yeah, it just makes no sense that he's not allowed to play. And even if Manchester United do want him back with a view to becoming their number one keeper, well, then surely big game semi-final experience is what they've sent him out on loan. That they're the kind of games he should be playing to get that experience and become a better goalkeeper.
Barry, I agree with you 100%. It is a silly rule. And if we can change it in the next couple of weeks, then we'll have achieved something. But I'm not sure if we have that much power. I did enjoy the penalty shootout, Jordan. I mean, because sort of, there just seemed to be a lot of, like, Morgan Gibbs-White scored and then put his fingers in his ears to the Wolves fans. And then, like, and then the next Wolves player then did it to the Forest fans. And because I think there were both Forest and Wolves fans sort of behind that goal, weren't they? Like, yeah, on different bits. And so, like, there was all sorts of drama in that moment.
Am I right in thinking that the fingers in the ear is just, I can't hear the noise now, or I can't hear what you're saying now? Is that what it's for?
I think so. I can't. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I presume so.
Okay. I think Gibbs-White is obviously, he's an ex Wolves, and I think they've been hammering him. But then I didn't really understand why everyone else started doing it after that.
It must be, as Max says, they must have been on the upper tier. They must have been the Forest fans, and the, I don't know. But I just love the fact that a player that plays against his former club scores a penalty in a shootout, doesn't give a shit, and says, listen, what are you saying now? I absolutely loved it. I loved it.
Meanwhile, Willy Bolly did, you know, the absolute non-celebration. It was almost like he didn't know he'd scored. He was like that, like, he was that desperate not to celebrate. So look, Southampton, Newcastle, Forest, Manchester United. These are actually, Robin, I think, really nicely set up, these semi-finals. I mean, I think, there are clear favourites in both, but I think you would be naive to say it's a guaranteed Newcastle, Manchester United final.
Yes, I think so. They're back to... they're two-legged, aren't they?
They're two-legged, yeah.
So, yeah, it's... I think, yeah, you're right. Those are two clear favourites. But no, it's great. It's also great that, apart from Man United, there are teams there that we don't really see potentially reaching a cup final. Obviously, if Southampton don't win at the weekend at Everton, Southampton fans, would you take going down but then winning the League Cup and potentially the FA Cup and not winning again in the Premier League this season?
I think you would have to take that. I mean,
wouldn't you?
I've definitely done those phone-ins before, and Wigan and Birmingham fans obviously, you know, have direct experience of this. And, you know, you can get relegated, you can go up again, but winning a trophy is not easy.
Yeah.
And I think you would take it. Ryan says, can I ask why the jingles were so loud on Wednesday's pod? I nearly swerved and crashed into a lamppost when part two started. I don't know the answer, and I very much hope you don't swerve and crash into a lamppost when part two begins in just a second. Hi Pod fans, Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May the 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. I hope everyone's all right after that jingle. let's look ahead to the Premier League games. Fulham-Chelsea took me by surprise. It's tonight. Fulham 3 points clear of Chelsea. Chelsea do have a game in hand. And, you know, Chelsea's sort of fascinating, Jordan, at the moment. You know, getting João Felix on loan. You know, Aubameyang hasn't worked, wants to go back to Barcelona. They're the only club he can go to because of UEFA rules. And if they lose tonight, they're, 6 points behind Fulham. They are, you know, they're behind Brentford as well, the smallest club in West
West London. I've got a Chelsea supporting dad. And if Fulham win this game tonight...
Makes it sound like you've got more than one dad.
Yeah, it did. Sorry.
Maybe you do.
One supports Crew, one supports Brentford. And if Fulham win this game tonight, I'm going to have a bet with him that Fulham finish above Chelsea this season. I'm impressed with what Fulham are doing. But yeah, Chelsea are a mess. And Chelsea, with this Felix signing, for me, it doesn't feel like they're learning lessons. It doesn't feel like it was a planned signing that as an obvious fit for what Graham Potter is trying to do. A lot of people are comparing Potter with Arteta, and stick with Potter because you've got to go through the pain to get to the good times. I don't necessarily think that that's why you should stick with Potter, although I think they should stick with Potter. But it feels like all around Potter, there's a lack of plan of what they're trying to do. And the Felix signing, which I think is a horrible deal, it's a really high loan fee, massive wages, and they can't keep him into next season if it goes well. It's a really bad and a weird deal, which is symptomatic for me, I think, of the chaos that's happening at Chelsea. But listen, there may be a method to the madness that Tom Bowley is imbuing there at that club, but Chelsea are in a bad way, and I can't see any obvious way out of it. I can't see like, okay, they're in a bad way now, but I can see a plan going forward. I just don't see it.
I totally agree with you, Jordan, because they've now spent, I think, over 350 million since the summer. And do they look any better? Well, I'm not sure if they do. And then you've got all these signings that looked really good under, you know, when the embargo was lifted under Frank Lampard, like Ziyech and Havertz, who just still, they look promising, but just not quite firing and being consistent. And I feel for Graham Potter, because it's like he's kind of stuck with these players. And also, I just wondered, does he want all these new? It's like, oh God, it's another one. You've got me another one. Does he want all this? I don't know, because I also don't know how. I always find it very interesting to hear how involved the manager is in sort of recruitment and how or not involved at all. And I just feel like he keeps being given more and more players, and I don't know if it's helping.
Well, he's a Christian Pulisic light now for the next couple of months, I think, because he's been ruled out with injury, I believe. So that's one less head count to worry about in training.
Yeah. I mean, they do have, the mitigating circumstances are the injuries. And as Wilson has pointed out on more than one occasion, you know, Reece James and Ben Chilwell make such a difference to that team. But, you know, if you aspire to be a top four club, you need to have strength and depth, I guess, is the converse argument. And you're right. But they may well beat Fulham tonight.
Jordan, should you not be putting this bet on with your Chelsea supporting father now rather than after the game?
Yeah, hot take, JJB.
Yeah, but the only thing is, I think if they go 6 points ahead of Chelsea, that for me is a good enough buffer for me to be confident that Fulham can hold them off. 3 points isn't quite enough.
I see. Yeah, you're all good with the hot takes, but when suddenly money's involved.
Yeah. I'm a wimp.
Manchester derby on Saturday. 8 wins on the bounce for Manchester United. I mean, you could argue, Robin, this is the first real test in this run, but that seems harsh because winning 8 games in a row anywhere is good. I sort of feel this is a fascinatingly set up game, especially with that result last night. It's It's really beautifully poised, this, isn't it?
It is, and also with Pep Guardiola's comments of him saying he might potentially do something weird, and who knows what that could be. Yeah, that would be interesting. I do think they need to get, as you mentioned in the previous pod, Max, if they get Big Vout in, it's nailed on, because, you know, Brentford got it launched against them and they did not like it. And if they get Weghorst in for the derby, that could really, that could be it. So no, you're right. It's something to really look forward to. The only thing I would say is City, obviously last night aside, the points they've dropped in the Premier League have generally been at home. So that defeat to Brentford and the draw against Everton, they seem to be slightly more potent away from home. But yeah, no, can't wait. It's, yeah, it's a big one for Erik ten Hag, because the reverse fixture was an absolute embarrassment, wasn't it? And he was very angry. So yeah, he'll definitely be wanting to at least put in a better performance.
I'm going to go hot take turbocharge here and suggest that some of the fixtures coming up for some of the big teams, Arsenal, United, City, Tottenham and Chelsea, all play each other quite a lot over the next 4 or 5 weeks. And if the results for City don't go their way, City have got United, they've got Spurs twice, I think, in the next couple of weeks. And my lot, Arsenal soon as well. If these don't go well for City, is there a chance that City could not finish in the top four?
No.
Wow.
I'm just saying. United are looking good. Arsenal are doing their thing. Spurs like being, they like playing Man City. No, is that a hot take too far?
That is sizzling.
I'm such an optimistic Tottenham fan when I'm watching them, like with full of hope. But when it's sort of 3 days away or a week away, I'm quite a realist. And I would say 2 games against Spurs is really nice for Man City. I would say at this stage. God, that would be absolutely wild, wouldn't it? You sign Haaland and you come fifth.
Not only that, but you sign Haaland and he scores lots and lots of goals.
Yeah, exactly. it's also the North London Derby this weekend. It's on Sunday. It is a huge game for both sides, isn't it, Baz? Because Arsenal didn't win for the first time in ages against Newcastle. Spurs have to win to keep in touch with the top four. And you've got Harry Kane 1 goal away from Jimmy Greaves' record. I mean, it's set up.
And it's at White Hart Lane, obviously.
Yeah.
It's a massive game. There's some really good fixtures this weekend, actually. And this is one of them. And it's got top billing Sunday, 4:30 p.m. Game. I think Arsenal are unquestionably a much better team than Tottenham. Whether or not they will beat them at the Lane, I don't know. But I would be veering towards Arsenal in that one, but not with a huge amount of confidence. But yeah, I think they probably will win it.
I think it's a must win for Spurs. I think it's a must win for Arsenal as well because of the drop points against Newcastle. If Arsenal have aspirations of wanting to win this Premier League title, they have to win the majority of their home games. And if you drop points, albeit against another top team, which they did against Newcastle, I feel like you've got to make it up in the next game. And also because if Arsenal were to lose this match to Spurs, their next game is against Manchester United. Now, let's say United beat City, which could happen. Spurs beat Arsenal. United go into that game of the Emirates, then licking their lips. And then I mentioned in City not finishing the top four. This time next month, Arsenal's standing could look very different as well. So
none of them are going to finish in the top four.
I've got Brentford in the top four. I've got Chelsea in the top four. I just think it's an important game for Arsenal because if they were to beat Spurs at Spurs, they can then bounce into that next game against United. I think that sends out a message, especially if City were to lose. So it's a must win, I think, for both clubs in this North London derby. In fact, it's a must win for all four clubs I know they're both on Sunday, but for City, United, Spurs and Arsenal. Everyone's got to win. Everyone just has to win.
How do you see the North London derby going, Robin?
Well, I want to ask you that. I mean, are you just hoping? I mean, how do you think Spurs could win this?
I mean, I think Arsenal are such a well-oiled machine. You know, they're just so nice to watch. They play such, like, joyous, fluid football. And if Tottenham do what they've tried to do recently and just sort of passively let the first half happen, that is a really bad idea. I don't know on the fitness of Kulusevski and Bentancourt. I think that makes a big difference. And, you know, they need Son to become the footballer he was last season. Like, they need that desperately. I've actually written a column about this for Harry Kane, saying, you know, he'll score a penalty in injury time to get the record. It just feels like that has to be. But obviously, that's a completely ridiculous idea, isn't it? You mentioned a lot of other big games, Barry. I mean, at the bottom, like Everton, Saints, Forest, Leicester, Wolves, West Ham are all enormous, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just quickly go back to the top. My turbo hot take is I think Brighton will do a number on Liverpool on Fair. Saturday.
I don't know how hot a take that is currently.
Yeah, probably
isn't.
I'd say
that's just a take.
A tepid take.
Leave the hot takes to me, Barry, mate. Leave the hot takes to me.
Yeah, down at the bottom, Forest-Leicester is a huge game, and obviously the bitter rivalry between those two clubs. Forest are on an upward trajectory. They're certainly heading in the right direction. I see no reason why that shouldn't continue against Leicester, who been what they weren't very good against Gillingham in the cup. They lost in the League Cup midweek, and yeah, I see no reason why they would beat Forest at Forest on Saturday. What's the other one?
Wolves West Ham.
Oh yeah, Wolves West Ham, big game. I'd be edging towards Wolves. They're at home. West Ham haven't been particularly impressive. Aston Villa Leeds. It's a big game for Leeds. They just can't quite get going, can they? They almost look like a very good team, but they're not quite there, and they don't seem to get much luck. And yeah, Everton Southampton, another massive game, and let's see how Southampton react after last night's brilliant win. They should go into that game full of confidence. I would imagine there ain't too much confidence or surrounding the Everton training ground at the moment. So yeah, just a load of really fascinating fixtures.
Do you think they're still booing at Goodison Park from the last home game? Goodness,
the echoes
me.
Are still there.
Yeah.
God, I mean, it's great how tight it is at the bottom, isn't it? And you just sort of want that, right? 13th, so Leicester have got 17 points in 13th place. And, okay, Southampton are on 12, but, you know, Everton, the relegation, are on 15. Like, you just got to hope that it doesn't thin out and they're all still in this sort of trouble with, like, three games to go.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the relegation battle in recent years has been a bit dull, hasn't it? Because we've had whenever Norwich come up, they're usually straight back down, and Watford as well. So no, and they're all showing that they can produce performances. I do think with Leicester, without Maddison, I think they were showing that they showed that he was actually really carrying them. He was having a sensational season and they're really struggling without him. And it made me very sad to see Jamie Vardy miss an absolute sitter against Newcastle. Yeah. It's like his powers are starting to wane. Just wonder, maybe he's built up an immunity to Red Bull or something, you know, when you have too many antibiotics. It's just, yeah, it's quite sad to see that, because what a Premier League icon he is. So yeah, I mean, Leicester really, I mean, they still feel like they're in trouble. I have no idea when Maddison's going to return. And then, yeah,
I think Bournemouth are in trouble. I mean, I think Bournemouth go to Brentford. I know they're not on a six-pointer, but they just, you know, they've lost their last three.
I wonder, could they have just kept it quiet that they gave Gary O'Neill the permanent job? Because, like, just keep interim, and then this might not have happened. This downward trajectory may not have happened.
It's ridiculous that that is a thing, but it really feels like it is a thing. Anyway, look, we'll obviously look back at all these games on Monday's pod. One for you from Bongo. Would like Jordan Jarrett Bryan to expand on his Declan Rice take, because even as a Hammers fan, I agreed with everything he said last time. I just wondered, did you get any feedback on suggesting that Declan Rice wasn't that good?
I did, and to be fair, it was split. Some thought I was talking absolute rubbish, and some were like, yeah, I know, I don't want to say it too loud either, but I want to be clear. Declan Rice is a really good football player. And any player I criticise on the Guardian Football Weekly podcast, I accept, is significantly better at playing the game of football than I am. However, I often feel there's lots of players that we overrate and over-talk about being brilliant and great. And maybe they're just semantics of words, but I hear Declan Rice spoken about as this, like, amazing player, and I just don't see it. I see a good player. I see a good player that is probably better than West Ham, But the talk of 150 million, 100 million pound plus, that for me falls into the Harry Maguire bracket of it's probably double what I think he's worth. So I think he's a good player, but I think he's spoken about in way too high terms. That's all.
Okay. That'll do for part two. Part three, we'll look ahead to the WSL. Do any other business as well? Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Robin, you'll be at Arsenal-Chelsea on Sunday in the WSL. Chelsea, 27 points from 10 games. Arsenal, 24 points from 9 games. Man United, just 2 points behind Arsenal. Amos says, would Arsenal stand a better chance against Chelsea if they start Mead and Miedemar and get them to strap themselves together and running around using the two functioning knees they have between them?
Like a three-legged race.
Exactly, yeah. It should be a fascinating game, shouldn't it?
Yeah, and but I think that's the big point, is that Arsenal, without Mead and Miedemar for the foreseeable, both will, like, well, Miedemar's definitely going to miss the World Cup. Mead was kind of saying she's hopeful, but I seriously doubt it. And it's just this scourge of ACL injuries to top players, which is so, it's so sad to see in the women's game. So yeah, Arsenal without two very, very big players. They made a couple of signings there in the January transfer window, both sort of young midfielders. Victoria Pullova and Katarina Kuhl. So I'm not sure if they'll start, but yeah, I mean, Chelsea will be favourites, I think, just because they lost their first game, I don't know if you remember, to Liverpool after it was 2-1, three penalties, so very bizarre. Yeah. And since then, they've won every single WSL game and they look very imperious. They had a really good win against PSG in the Champions League just before the break. Kirby's back, Sam Kerr, Gura Wrighton, they've got a ridiculous sort of attacking force, so I think they'll probably be favourites, although it's at the Emirates, and you know, Jonas Eidevall is a really astute manager, but yeah, huge blow, and very difficult to replace Mead and Miedemar. So I think they'll probably will still try and recruit a couple more forwards before the window shuts. And then yeah, just like the Premier League, the title race is fantastic. Man United in third. And they beat Arsenal at the Emirates just before the break. So really showing that they can produce against the big sides. That was the big question mark. And they kept coming fourth. So they've come fourth the last three seasons, which is just outside the Champions League places. So real hope that they'll at least get a Champions League place for the first time in their history. And then Man City again, slow start, lost their first two, but now they're picking up and they're in fourth just behind Man United. Unfortunately, relegation looks nailed on for Leicester, who have not got a single point from their 9 games. So they look pretty doomed.
I don't know if you know the answer to this. I mean, like you say, it's such a massive shame. I've always, like, Miedemar's not my favourite player in the women's game. It's such a shame she's missing the World Cup. She's just such a natural talent. And Mead, of course, as well. So I don't know if you know the answer to this. Presumably, there is so much discussion about ACL injuries in the women's game. It doesn't, you know, to the layman, seem possible to change that. You know, you've got to run around, you've got to twist and turn. Like, you can't not do that. But I just wonder what advances there are in, I don't know, strengthening quads and hamstrings and whatever to change it or to reduce the risks.
Yeah, there's a lot. But I mean, there's been a lot of podcasts, a lot written about it. And actually in fact, it seems to be getting worse. But I think that's because they're playing more games. You know, there's more games in the Champions League now. There's more internationals. And so it's more likely they're going to get it. But yeah, there's so many aspects that people have raised, like that could contribute, like periods, like footwear, because, you know, they're not bespoke footwear. They're ultimately, unless you, I think you can get sort of, you know, molded to your feet. But that, you know, this is talking about the top level players who can do that. And then also just the way they land, sort of hips. It's a lot of stuff and a lot of research, because ultimately most medical research has been on men. And so it's still very, very behind, and hopefully more can be done to stop it, because, you know, you kind of in football anyway, you kind of prefer a broken bone, don't you, to an ACL, because it's just the worst. And in terms of rehab and recovery, it's the lengthiest injury. And also, I think you're more likely to do it again, either to the other knee or the same one. You know, a lot of them do end up doing it again after returning. So, and it's just, whenever you hear about it, you think, oh no, not another one. It's just, yeah, it's really sad.
I mean, look, the discussion in the men's game again about players playing too much is also true, right? And at some point, you know, that the trouble is the people at the top of the game, and I presume it's the same in the women's as it is in the men's, you know, more games equals more money. Now, more money obviously means more, you know, at some point means more research into things like how do we stop this? But we need our elite footballers to play less football, men or women. I mean, it seems that simple. And how you do that when you've got Infantino trying to start, you know, Club World Cup this, 80 million teams in the men's World Cup, et cetera, et cetera. It just doesn't feel like, you know, I don't know about you, but it feels like there's been football every day for like the last decade, right? I just can't remember a time when he's going, oh, there's another one, going, oh, you know, and it's tiring enough to have to just watch it. But like for these, you know, people have to run around the whole time. They're not playing in every game, but yeah, what a shame that they're going to miss the World Cup. Obviously, Women's Football Weekly, Guardian Women's Football Weekly is excellent, but Robin is on it a lot, as are lots of other brilliant panellists, and Faye Carruthers, your host. So download it and everyone should listen to it. Here to Watch says, Gilliam have put the Crawley match as pay what you can for all tickets, which is nice, isn't it, Barry?
Is this pay what you can before you go in or pay what you think they deserve after the game is over?
That's quite a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah, sounds like a risk.
It does. Gillingham, you know, aren't having the greatest season. They only scored 7 in the league. So, you know, if they did score, you'd have to chuck them more than a ticket, wouldn't you, really?
I think it'd be a comedy gig where that was the deal. You paid on the way out. So whatever you thought, depending on how entertained you've been, you dig deeper into your pocket. Well, it's Neil Harris. He's in charge at Gillingham, isn't he?
And the Crawley.
Crawley. Or they're in absolute meltdown, aren't they?
They've just taken the Swindon manager, so I've no idea why he's gone from Swindon to Crawley, who look a complete basket case.
Yeah, actually, because we talked about West Brom, and a Birmingham fan got in touch to say, look, all well and good talking about West Brom, but like there is real problems at Birmingham City. There's obviously Crawley as well. We have plans in the pipeline to sort of break down a
basket case
EFL pod, because there are lots of clubs that are sort of being run in incredibly weird and desperate ways. And some of them are quite funny, unless it's your club, and then it's shit, basically. And so we will do that in the near future.
Well, I think we all saw the Crawley car crash coming. I mean, you didn't have to be a genius to figure that one out, or to foresee disaster there. But I think we probably need more than one special. It's
announced Kieran Maguire klaxon, isn't it, for that pod. Imi has been in touch to say, hi, Football Weekly. On your pod today, you mentioned that Peter Crouch isn't that good in the air. He currently holds the record for most headed goals in Premier League history. What would he have to do to be considered good in the air? It's quite a good point, isn't it?
I saw this on Twitter yesterday. Someone raised it. I maintain what I said. He is an aerial threat. And obviously, because he's 6'7", he is going to score headers. But I think for a player who's 6'7" tall and a striker, he was nowhere near as good in the air as he should have been.
But no other centre-forward has scored more headers than him in the Premier League.
I think he scored 51 headers. I think he should have scored a lot more.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. No, I instinctively agreed with you when you said it. When somebody sent me the statistic, I found it quite funny. But it was you and Johnny Lewis. Well, you weren't alone in saying that. Or maybe he was just so much better with his feet that he was very good at heading, but because he was better with his feet, we'd have a sort of false look at how his aerial prowess.
Do we know what are the charts there? Like who's near him at the top of the charts? I'm going to guess Shearer's probably up there somewhere.
Cahill? Tim Cahill?
Cahill. So here we go.
I think Kane's probably up there now. He keeps scoring headers.
Okay, so this is in the Premier League only all-time stats. Crouch is top with 40. Kane is second with 37. Cahill is seventh, joint seventh on 22.
Andy Carroll?
You've got Andy Carroll joint is sixth on 24.
Shearer?
He is not there. It can't be possible. That cannot be possible. It cannot be possible that Shearer is not in the top.
Oh, did he play? He was pre-Premier League as well. Did he intersect?
Was he? I mean, I think mostly he was Premier League, wasn't he? 92, 93. Do you want them?
Yeah.
What, come on, Barry. One of your.
Oh,
favorites.
Quinny.
No.
Super.
Giroud.
Giroud is there, fourth. Christian Benteke is third.
Ah, right.
Andy Carroll, Tim Cahill, Kenwyn Jones, Mikel Antonio, and Wayne Rooney are the top 10 according to this chart, but no Shearer. Seems very strange, doesn't it? So look forward to being corrected on that one. From Opta Joe, an updated chart from Opta Joe. Crouch, Shearer, Dion Dublin, Les Ferdinand, Dwight York, Duncan Ferguson, Teddy Sheringham, Olivier Giroud, Tim Cahill, Christian Benteke. So the Premier League website itself needs updating. PM Ryder says, amongst others, I should read out a couple of these. I'm sorry to crush your excitement at Buffon playing at 44, but Inter won 2-1 in extra time with a winner coming from an Acerbi header 18 yards out after Buffon couldn't get back up quick enough, having got low down for a save, which he parried, knocking Palmer out. I don't know, I just saw somewhere that Palmer had won and I clearly wasn't doing enough research. So my apologies. And, bad luck, especially apologies to Palmer fans who hadn't followed the game and were following on this pod.
Yeah. I'd imagine this pod is where Parma fans come for all the latest Parma news.
And Will says, how did Robin Cowan feel about soundtracking the London New Year's Eve fireworks? Will any other Football Weekly regulars receive this honour in the future? Didn't know you did this, Robin.
Well, I didn't either because I was in bed at 9:30, so I got a lot of messages saying, very odd, very
Who
odd.
Who did the fireworks? So you didn't do it?
No, apparently my voice was on it. I was not involved in anything. I was just told that, we heard you. For some reason, they put Euro commentary on the fireworks. I don't know why.
Oh, right. But they didn't just record. They didn't surreptitiously.
A deep fake.
So someone recorded you just doing a countdown. Just go 10, 9, 8, 7. Well, that is weird, isn't it? All right, so you weren't there live. Oh, okay. Well, I hope
No.
Do you get money for this?
Unfortunately not, no. I was thinking about this because my commentary's played a fair amount now. And it
is, yeah.
I would have loved to have, if I had the foresight to do that, like one of those people who have a one-hit wonder and don't have to work again because it just, or like a Christmas song.
I can just see BBC management reacting when you say, they say, Rob, we want you to do the final. And you say, I'd like to own the world rights to this. And them saying, we found somebody else. Goodbye. Yeah.
That backfired.
It's wonderful you did it anyway, isn't it, Robin? What a great,
Who
else? It's you and Kenneth Wollstoneholm. They're the only people who have commentated on, England winning a major trophy. So, you're in good company.
It's not bad, not bad. Downhill from here.
Isn't it? Anyway, we all peaked years ago, Robin.
I'm in good company.
It's nice to know when you have peaked because you don't have to achieve anything else. And that'll do for today. Thank you, Jordan.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you, Robin.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Baz.
Cheers.
Football Weekly was produced by Silas Gray. Our executive producer is Max Silas, and we'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.